Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Amidi.
How's it going, Emily?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes.
So we're going to load up the chat while we talk to the first question. We have a first question that we were talking about that somebody left a little bit ago.
Yeah, it's a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions. Cut in little pieces.
First thing is, I have a problem with when I play the high register C, the flute. After a while, when playing practice rolls out, and I cannot play it. I think it's a balance problem, yeah, probably. And where my thumb position is on my left hand, is the thumb position under the index finger supposed to be exactly vertical, up and down, or it can be slanted? But the left hand thumb doesn't hold the flute. It's
no.
The right hand thumb that holds the flute.
That's
so I
it.
Don't know if she mixed up right and left. We did a video a while back about flute posture where it's pretty well explained.
Yeah, the flute posture video is pretty good. It's true.
So you can watch that video, but just I'll still explain a little bit. So, you know, you have that metal, those two metal rods that make the flute want to go back. Your problem, you say, is that it's going forward, but usually the flute wants to go back because it's more heavy in the back. So you can try to find a good point so that when you put your flute up, even with no pinkies, just the thumb and the index finger, the thumb of the right hand and the index finger of the left hand, and your chin, it's held, and because you don't want your fingers to hold the flute because your fingers have to move. And they're not going to be efficient if they're grasping on something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you have to look for. So for the thumb of the left hand, well, your left hand, the index finger will be curved a little bit and put under that second key here.
Mm-hmm.
Then your thumb should be pretty, just like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just as natural as you can. You don't want to make it, you know, bending it like this or no, just like that. Because if you bend it, you're gonna, you know, all these muscles here, they're gonna overwork.
Totally.
Then you're gonna have cramps. It's gonna be quite painful.
Oh yeah.
Only when I trill sometimes do I bend it. It goes faster.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I just play normally, I keep it straight. So I do think it's a problem of balance. What might help, maybe a thumb port would help. You put it, you know, you have your three keys here, the key on which you put your index finger of the right hand, you put the thumb port there, might help you hold your flute easier. So maybe try that and then come back to us and say if it helped or not. Maybe have a sub question, or maybe you mixed up right and left, I don't know. But yeah, so you have to put your flute on your chin. That's one of your fulcrum points. Then your index finger here, then your thumb. And then it has to be held like this.
Mm-hmm.
The pinky of the right hand might help, but it's not. It shouldn't be necessary to hold your flute. And then you have a force going. Your right hand pushes forward and your left hand pushes towards you.
Okay, yeah.
And then it gives a... Like those two forces act against each other to hold the flute. Instead of thinking of holding it up, you just bring it like this and you lock it. It's easier. It's less work on your arms and on your shoulders, because if you think up, you might bring it up everything and then tire your whole neck and your. So you stay straight and wide and like this. So I hope that helps.
Another question, yeah.
And also your embouchure, you shouldn't cover more than one-third to one-quarter, but it has to be, like, one-third to one-quarter has to be covered, not more nor less, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much that.
That.
Yeah. So do you want me to finish that
question? Yeah, the whole thing. Let's do the whole thing. Why not?
So my thumb tends to be slanted about 30 degrees to the right, I think. No, just keep it straight. You know, like when you hold your hand like this, as natural as possible. Then you have this thing going on, but the thumb, you know, don't overthink it and push it. Then when I play, and then also where should then flute rest in the index finger? Yeah, the flute rests on the index finger here, this point. Then also when I play a F or even an E, only in the middle register, it does not sound clear like the other notes. I play the lower octaves and higher octaves okay in this regard. Can you advise me as how to correct these two problems? I would appreciate. Okay. So those are fragile notes. E, F, and F sharp in the middle register.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
They're fragile. What I would do, try to take your favorite note, your best note, and then go to the E, you know?
Oh, go down. Yeah, go to the E. Yeah, okay.
But they're fragile notes. And what I try to do is I visualize that I blow it more across the flute than in front for those notes. It's a visualization.
It's all visualization, but it helps, yeah.
You can try maybe singing the notes, and then playing it, and then playing with while you sing.
Mm-hmm.
Moïse book, there's an exercise where you always go back to the E and you do all your notes. You go E, F.
Yeah, the Yeah, the Marcel Moïse book, yeah.
Yeah, it's called, is it here?
Is it De La Sonorité?
De La Sonorité,
yeah.
Art et Technique, on Sonority, Art and Technique.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get where is it? There it is. It looks like this on YouTube or on Amazon or wherever you want to get it.
Page 16. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Page 16. Look at that. You have a bookmark.
Page 16.
Nerd.
You have the exercise. On page 15, they show how to do it. There's three ways to do it. And that can help, you know. But really, you don't, like, you just take your E. And then go to F, and then go back to E, go F sharp, go back to E, and do every semitone like that going
right.
Back to
yeah,
E.
Yeah.
So like, and you can play it slurred by two. You can play He writes it in triplets, so. However you want to practice it, it's gonna, you go back to your E all the time, so you're gonna get some, you know, you're gonna get more how do you say that, comfortable on those notes, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, I would practice it like that. Mm-hmm. That's how I practiced it when I was learning
when you were learning. Yeah, it's a great way to learn.
Then also, how long should I practice every day? It's not just about how long you practice. There's a lot of different things. It's about how you organize your practice also.
Yeah, and how you set your goals and all those types of things, yeah.
I think you should have a little exercise for sound, like playing all your notes, long notes, you know, all the and just focus on your sound. Then you should have a little finger exercise, maybe a scale, an arpeggio. You can make a graph with all your scales you want to learn and then put an X so you don't always practice the same ones. You go through different scales because that person is self-taught, so you have to be able to organize yourself. Then maybe a study, if you know a study book. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot online that are
what? Which one? Somebody asked that question just now. They were wondering, do you know any books for self-taught flutists? There are not many teachers where they are. They're in India. Or flute method books. Well, we're making a flute method book that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
But there are other books, and
but there's
setting up.
Honestly, I'm writing it because I think
doesn't exist. Yeah,
for self-taught, because in flute you have a lot of you have one book for your sound and then one book for your technique, and then so what we're trying to do is a book where you would have everything organized for you already.
By the week almost, right? You have it like on a weekly, so like you practice one thing, it says
so
week one and then week two. Yeah.
Lesson one, because maybe it will take you 3 days, maybe it will take you 2 weeks, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When you master that, you go to the next lesson. So you have a sound exercise, a finger exercise, a skill, maybe a, a study. Well, it depends on the level, you know.
Right.
But everything's organized for you, so that's going to be very helpful.
And there's even things inside of it, if you don't, if I'm not mistaken, like for self-taught flutes to reinforce. There'll be reinforced exercises inside as well that they can constantly use throughout throughout
and
their
like
thing.
The first book, I'm making it more like a week-to-week thing.
Yeah.
But the second one, I'm thinking of having a section that's sound exercise, a section that's technique, but then have another part where I say do this one this
for a week,
for
however many times,
you know,
yeah.
So that it's easy and you don't lose too much time figuring out
what to do.
Do. And you want to practice and you don't know
how to practice, you don't know what to work on.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know what to work on, so they work on a lot of things, or they work on, a lot of people work on what they are good at.
Yeah.
Instead of their weaknesses, which we all have. We have more weaknesses than we have good things, I think, sometimes when you're first starting out. Because you're developing, right?
But you have to pick one thing because you're going to...
I know, but a lot of people don't pick... That's what I mean, though. But they always pick the... I think some people pick the easy thing first.
But I think it's about organizing your practice.
Absolutely.
So you do a little bit of each, you know?
That, yeah, exactly.
And also, it's more efficient to practice less more often than to practice 2 hours. Let's say you practice 15 minutes a day, or... What would be 15 minutes a day would be an hour and 45 minutes to do an hour and 45 minutes in one day. It's more efficient to do often, you know. But I think 30 minutes five times a week, five, six times a week is good. You should always keep a day where you don't practice. But it depends on your goals. When I was younger, I used to practice 30 minutes. Then I went up to an hour. Then I went up to 3 hours and five hours. And then... went back down because I had kids and life and stuff. And but, you know, it's important how do you organize it and to be focused when you do it so it's efficient and you're not learning mistakes.
Yeah. That goes out to also another thing is Rich here, and we'll answer Steven's question next after this, but Rich is asking, how do teachers feel about Zoom or Skype lessons for situations where teachers are far and few? You know,
yeah, I did a Skype lesson
yesterday. Yeah, the guy was from Chicago.
Yeah, it went very well, I thought.
Yeah, you do them pretty well. I think they're really fun, and you do them quite well, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You get to meet so many different types of people.
Yeah,
Lewis, it's pretty awesome.
There's a slight difference that, you know, when I teach it's easy to play together.
Those are the things that are missing. Like playing
you
together,
can't because there's a little delay, so I can be like, let's play it together.
Yeah, you can't, yeah.
But I can give the example and say then...
Repeat,
stuff like that. I still see pretty well what's going on with the embouchure. If I don't, sometimes I ask to go on the side, if I want to see something on the side and stuff like that. But I think it's possible.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. You do it. And I think there's a lot of ways to teach that way that can really benefit. Plus, I think eventually some ideas and some people can do, and I've seen people do it, is record examples of you playing and then send it via email so they can play along with you off time as well.
Yeah,
so there's different things like that. So many different ways.
Yeah. And, you know, like with my students that I have here, I write in their book what they have to practice. So with him, I send him an email.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, but it's all...
It's different, but it's all... I think it works. I think it works well. Stephen Hughes, he has a question that bunch of people... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Am I mistaken? I think there's some universities that have full studios that are very well equipped so they can really do... But it's not Skype. Like, it's a... Like, I think the Conservatory of Vienna, if I'm not mistaken, they have a thing like that and they can... teach
well, both sides have to have good internet. It can't just be one-sided, right?
So but I think some universities have
maybe like Coursera like things.
I don't know,
master classes maybe or something.
No, I think it's really
interactive. Yeah, maybe
I've heard of that.
Yeah,
like,
maybe it's a test, maybe it's a test thing because it's really hard.
A study they were doing how is it possible to do it,
because internet depends on, it has to be both sides. If the other person's internet's really spotty, it's going to reduce the quality.
It's still Skype, but it's just about having...
Yeah.
Because I remember also seeing about piano lessons, and they had different camera angles so you could see the hand very well. And then they did a big study, and they compared if the students live or the students that they were teaching remotely, if they were getting as much result, and they were.
Mm-hmm.
There was no real difference in the learning.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they had all those cameras on the hand.
Oh, yeah.
And then the teacher could be like, look at my hand.
Right.
And they were very equipped from one university to the other, and they had all those cameras. And
but stuff. Was it live? Like,
it was live. Yeah.
That's
it
interesting.
Was private lessons, you know? Interesting. With the kids, they did that study. I saw that in a
very interesting
conference I went to a few years ago.
Yeah, it must have been something that's like a test, you know? Like they were just trying it out.
Like scientific study with statistics and stuff.
Right, exactly. Steven, he says he recently got accepted to play at his university wind ensemble, but he's a graphic design major. He gets heavily nervous when he plays. How can I control his player anxiety?
Okay, there's many things. Breathing is a good way to control your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I talk about that a lot recently, but there's an exercise, a breathing exercise that's very easy. It's called cardiac coherence. You can write that on YouTube and then just do the exercise. And some people, I know someone who had a fear of planes. She couldn't go in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And she started doing that 3 times a day. And now she's, it's done, it's gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because from your brain to your heart, there's two nerves that go from your emotional brain to your heart,
mm-hmm.
and that regulate. One is more like a accelerator, one is more like a brake, you know. And when you breathe that way, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, you breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth for 5 minutes, it regulates your heartbeats and it regulates your emotions. So you have that. So that's something you can do every day. If you can do it 3 times a day, I'm pretty sure that would help and regulate your emotions. And then there's many other things you can do. First, if you're prepared, it's going to be, you know, you're going to be more confident.
Exactly.
Also, you can play that you're confident. If you have a good posture, if you, you'll feel more confident than if you are crunched up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what I do when I'm not confident, I imagine that I'm someone else, someone that I admire, and I just go, and I'm this person, so I'm not,
mm-hmm.
It's not me, you know?
Right.
Or sometimes we feel, you know, because maybe you're a graphic designer, you have the, how do you call that, the syndrome?
Imposter syndrome, yeah, sure.
So
oh, yeah.
So maybe not being you.
But yeah, pretending. Yeah, I remember you saying that before.
And then you go in and mm-hmm. you have that confidence, because, and then at one point it's gonna
mm-hmm.
resolve it on its own.
That's a really good way of thinking it about it.
Yeah, I think also just focusing on what you have to do, and not on yourself.
Right, because you're also I think because it's a wind ensemble, it's like even in an orchestra, but wind ensemble is even I think more fun in a way because you're all playing as a team, and it's not just you by yourself. You have a bunch of flutists, so you're all playing together, or you're part of a wind section. I think
you're not just there with the
There's no spotlight on you.
No.
It's I always feel it's like a team building thing.
Yeah.
Get to know your what I would like to do when I don't know people in those places, or I get thrown into situations when I was young in wind ensembles, is I got to know everybody, and that usually cuts the edge off a lot. And getting to know people after the rehearsal, go for a drink or hang out, get to know people, because then it just makes people more human, because you're playing something that's very communicative and personal, and if you're all kind of working together, it kind of cuts the edge off a little bit too.
And it makes me think also, when you say that, also sharing your fear with your colleagues, because it just saying it, I'm a bit nervous about playing. Just saying it might lower your anxiety, might trigger some compassion and empathy
mm-hmm.
in the other person, and then you'll feel like you're sharing something instead of feeling like
mm-hmm.
you have to prove something.
Yeah, because you already got accepted in, you know, you auditioned, you got in.
Yeah.
Now I think getting to know people will break a little bit of the tension for sure, you know. Yeah.
And it's about you do your best, you know? And then what else can you do? You let it go. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's this. But for me, whenever I start thinking about what others are thinking or stuff like that, I stop myself right away. And then I focus on what I have to do. Because I have no control over what people are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's their thing. But I have control over what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I control that I'm playing this, that I'm breathing this way, yeah. that I'm blowing this way, moving my fingers. That I can control. So I focus on that. The other stuff, I try to block it out. Just it's a kind of mental discipline to stop your... You know, the Buddhists, they call it the monkey brain that goes bah, 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 all the time and disturbs us, that monkey brain that goes, oh, you're not good enough, oh, nye, 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 and you have to shut the monkey brain, you know?
Yeah, and like one last thing would be like, you know, also rehearsals are just rehearsals. They're meant to get all the mistakes out, you know? So don't be afraid to make mistakes in rehearsal because that's what that rehearsal's for. It's to, you know, have a pencil, be like, oh, this happened here, mark it. That way next time, and then you get that edge that during a concert to just perform and say those things that you want to say with the group. Anyways, Lenoa Mbove, or Likona Mbove, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, I'm so sorry. Does it matter which edition of flute pieces you play from? Because flute wouldn't need written fingerings like violin or piano. Yeah, because there's, well, sometimes because there's some bad editions that are have weird on some pieces that have bad articulations and bad depends but like most of the time it's okay
music, I would say.
Yeah, there was always that, there was always the like Reinecke, there's a sonata that's made by Carl Reinecke, and he there's several editions of that sonata, you know, there's a Galway edition, there's a something else edition, there's like 10 editions and they all have different
slurs
and articulations. So, you know, I would try to just listen to recordings that you like and then try to find, you know, a lot
it's
of websites now.
For romantic music, though, because usually we think about that for Baroque music, because Baroque music very often, you know, Baroque composers, they didn't write
articulations. Yeah, none. Yeah.
But then you'll find some editions that have those, and also that have tempo marks. But metronome, the metronome wasn't invented at that time, so those shouldn't be taken as literal. It's a suggestion by the editor. But if you buy Urtext, U-R-T-E-X-T, then you get the edition that's really only what the composer wrote.
As close as possible, yeah, exactly.
So it does matter if you want to really see what the composer wrote, and then you can add your own. Because when you play Baroque music, you add your own articulations. There's a couple of rules, but really you add your own stuff. And people used to know at that time what were the tasteful slurs to put. If you had a scale going down, usually you would do by two, all types of things.
That's
like that.
It.
If you had a, you know, but if you go towards editions that are Urtext, U-R-T-E-X-T, then you'll have what's closest to what the composer wrote. In
exactly.
The music. Huh. In other editions, you'll have what the editor wrote. You might agree with it, but then it's not your choice. You don't know what's what.
So. That's super interesting. Yeah. Hopefully we answered that question for you. Another question was Saran Isaac. He says, I have problems finding pieces for his level. I usually can't find pieces for my level because I don't have any flute grade books. Also, Bandgeek says sort of the same thing. What are some good flute solo pieces for grade 2 or 3? There are one or two flute grade books. Maybe you can find
there's a book.
Suzuki? There's three.
Suzuki
has a flute book. And the Royal Conservatory of Canada has a book. And also the ABRSM, the British version, I guess. There's a British version as well. And those are those ones I know about.
I think also if you go on the Conservatory of Toronto, like
Royal Conservatory of Canada, RCM
website, you can see their syllabus.
Yeah.
And then you can see, let's say you're grade 2 or 3, they have suggested pieces.
Yeah, so they use the word syllabus because people don't know that word when they're looking for pieces. The syllabus is the thing they call the book.
It's a program, really.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Like, it's so hard to find for some people because
so
they don't know that word.
It's S-Y-L-L-A-B-U-S.
Something like that, yeah.
And you can find it online, and then you'll have suggested pieces for your level and suggested, you know, when we were talking about how to organize your practice,
yeah.
that can be a way.
Yeah.
You know, you can go there, but then it's longer. That's why mm-hmm. we're making a book where you would get everything. That it would be way easier.
Yeah, have a little package to be able yeah. to develop and then go out that way.
But there's also a lot online that you can find. Mm-hmm. That is public domain.
Oh, the pieces. Yeah, you can find... There's a lot of pieces. All Baroque music is in public domain.
Yeah.
If you search hard enough at on IMSLP.org, you can... There's sheet music there for...
And there's
yeah.
flutetunes.com.
Yeah, flutetunes.com. Yeah.
So if you go on the syllabus of RCMP, you find...
RCM, yeah.
RCM? You find... Yeah, that's... you find the... the pieces, and then you can find them
cross,
online.
Yeah, cross through that, yeah.
And,
yeah. But yeah,
but
there's
we'll
a...
finish that book.
Yeah, exactly.
And that will be very helpful for
yeah.
people, I think.
But yeah, grade 2 and 3, you know, those are... I don't know what grade level that is, but like, for grade 2 and 3 is really low if it's out of 10. So like, I don't know. I would recommend Telemann, Fantasias. They're nice and fun to play.
There's a lot
of
nice...
Icicle is fun.
As well, Vivaldi,
yeah,
and...
If you want something more modern, like Icicle is a really cool piece people play that is a very low level.
Icicle is a bit higher than...
There's a... Yeah, there's some solo pieces as well, but I mean the...
By Robert Aitken, you mean? Icicle?
Yeah, no, maybe not.
No,
maybe not that one.
It's way more
advanced. And then there's Bach. Bach's CP Bach and
yeah.
stuff like that. Little things. Baroque
yeah.
music is a good place to start, like Telemann and stuff. Vivaldi. There's some really easy Vivaldi sonatas. You can find all those there. What else is there here? We do offer Skype lessons. People are asking us. We do offer Skype lessons. You can check us out at info@theflutechannel.com. You can email us and we can tell you everything you need to know about that. And then, what are the benefits of filling your cheeks with air? This person, Michael, he's seen professionals doing that. Probably circuit breathing is what they're talking about. Like,
because you shouldn't put air in your cheeks except if you're circulating.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's just gonna.
Yeah. And other instruments, they have pressure buildup, so maybe it's their trumpet. They've seen people doing like that, but you know, like Dizzy Gillespie used to do the big puffy thing,
but
like
but
they don't
the
can't do it on the flute. Yeah, you can't really. Not everyone
it's
does
not
it.
Like
yeah.
a technique you teach.
Yeah.
It's
so
just
like
he was doing it that way, but
yeah.
I guess it's circular breathing. When you circular breathe, you put a little bit of air in your mouth, and then while you're pushing with your cheeks, you breathe in through your nose at the
mm-hmm.
same time. So
like Dizzy. Not like Dizzy Gillespie, that's what you said. I'm so sorry. Because that's what I think of when I think puffed up air.
But
yeah.
I don't put air in my cheeks.
I don't notice doing it if I do it at all.
No, I try to keep...
I keep a
tight,
tube. I keep
know?
A tube. Like it's a straw of air coming out and then through, you know.
I think the tube analogy is a bit dangerous because it might make people go with their lips forward.
Yeah, or a tunnel in the throat, like a tunnel,
yeah,
you know?
You
like,
don't want your upper lip to go like this.
No, I know. I don't try to say the lips. I mean, like, inside
oh,
my
okay,
body
okay.
is what I meant. Like,
yeah.
inside my body, it's like a tunnel, you
okay,
know?
Yeah.
A circular tunnel, oval tunnel. Because my cheeks, they kind of actually go in a tiny bit
yeah,
when I breathe
that's
in. Like,
what
it's a natural way. I don't even force, it's just natural.
No, my cheeks stay in. Yeah, they don't. I don't put air.
But yeah,
you're probably right. It's probably someone who was doing circular
yeah,
breathing
probably,
that they
I
saw.
Think so. Yeah,
yeah.
It's an articulation, guys. When they articulate, oh, when they articulate, they puff out their cheeks. Like
classical players or jazz players?
I don't know. I think jazz, but I'm not sure because there's a bit of comments.
I don't see why you would
yeah.
puff your cheeks when you articulate. There's no...
Yeah.
Maybe you see that as air. Maybe it's a movement in the mouth that makes the cheek move
yeah.
a bit, but it's probably not air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh.
You know? Maybe
mm-hmm.
it's when the tongue is moving, makes the cheeks move. I don't know. Because I don't see why you would put air in your cheeks when you articulate. Like, don't overthink it. It's just
mm-hmm.
go with your tongue there and let the air go out.
Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce this person's name because it's in Russian, but they've been playing for 2.5 years, and many teachers said that they don't have a full sound and their embouchure is clamped. Do you have any advice for them?
So you're too tight.
That's what, yeah, clamped means like tight, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, probably try to keep your lips just as natural as you can. Put a mirror in front of you. Try to keep your lips neutral. Don't smile, don't frown. Check how you are. Are you smiling or mm-hmm. frowning? Just mm-hmm. keep yeah. it
check
straight.
Those things. That's a good checklist.
Check in the mirror. Then put your flute. Keep your upper lip close to your teeth. Don't move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then just do the easiest notes first.
Yeah.
Just that. And for a couple of minutes, just play your easiest notes and keep it like that. And then try to, let's say it's a low G, okay? And then you play your low G. And you look at yourself, and then you try to keep it like that and go higher and lower and only use your lower lip, your lower jaw to this part. You can move forward when you go in the higher register and a bit back when you go in the lower register, but the rest doesn't move. And keep it natural and not... Don't tighten it as natural as possible. And in the beginning, if you can't play in the high register, it doesn't matter. Just try to keep it like that and move slowly. I would start there, and then maybe write to us again and tell us if it helped, and maybe ask another question once you've done that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let us know about it in the comments of this video when it gets uploaded. Recomment and answer if you're watching still.
I think maybe... Maybe you just don't support enough. You don't push. You don't put enough resistance with the support of the air. And that's why you feel you have to make a resistance with your lips.
Yeah.
So
try the lack of, yeah.
Put your hand on your belly and do the sound S like this.
Yes.
And then you'll feel which muscles in your belly are moving.
Uh-huh.
And even... all around your waist,
mm-hmm.
in your back, and
yeah.
feel them. And then when you play the flute, you have to engage those muscles.
Yeah.
This way, you won't use mm-hmm. these muscles.
Because a lot of people, yeah, because people, a lot of people
you
compensate
to, yeah,
by using, yeah,
by with their
mouth, which it shouldn't
they
be.
Should
yeah.
really use
their body,
the muscles that mm-hmm. push the air out.
Right, exactly.
So just go. And touch yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Try to feel
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
they are. And then when you play, use the exact same muscles.
Mm. Yeah, let us know. Let us know how that works. That would be amazing. And then we can reevaluate again. Licona, again. She's not sure. She says, Nina Perlov. She wants to talk about Nina Perlov. She's known for her unconventional flute technique. Even though she is very good, do you have any thoughts on unconventional flute technique? I don't know about her technique that much. I watch a lot of her stuff, but I can't really understand, like...
What's unconventional? I watched a couple
yeah,
of her videos.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't see it as unconventional.
Yeah, me either. She does... I don't know. I
thought she explained well. And
me too, yeah. She studied
I saw,
French.
I
yeah,
agreed.
Me too as well, yeah.
But I didn't watch everything that she did. But I usually
yeah.
agreed.
She's a tall flute player, like a couple other people, like Alexa Still and Robert Aiken. They have different techniques than shorter people do, I noticed. Like they do a lot
yeah.
of turning because they kind of like surround the flute. So they do something different, I think.
Of course,
to be honest.
If you have a different body type, it would be logical that
yeah.
Yeah, you would play differently because you have a different
yeah.
set of, you know.
yeah, you have a different skeleton. You have a different
yeah.
everything. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why they see, because it's true,
yeah.
like Alexa Still, you watch her play, it's completely different.
Oh, yeah. Watch that video with
but
you guys playing Maya, and it's two different types of just the hands of where everything is.
Yeah.
It's like that with
because
every flute player.
She's so
yeah.
tall.
Yeah, she's very tall. Yeah.
Like, I barely get to my flute.
Right,
you know?
And she's just
and
like...
She's like, ooh, that's
yeah, easy.
easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I think I never really even... I've known her for a long time, and I've never heard that somebody say that she has unconventional flute technique.
No,
so,
I think she's...
She studied the French way.
Yeah.
She studied with Marianne and all those people,
yeah.
so...
What we can
Funny.
See as unconventional, some flutists, they will play a little bit on the
side. Yeah,
sideways, like
yeah.
I don't think she does that.
No, she
but
doesn't. She's straight,
do
yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the sound. It's, you know, those little things. Everyone has little unconventional things. You know, if you look at Rampal, he used to put his pinky under the G sharp.
Oh yeah, I used to do that a lot as
and
well.
I would never teach that.
Oh yeah,
you have to bring it back. But I
he does it. He does
it
fine.
Oh my god, it works.
Yeah, because it makes this technique. I've heard him say it makes his technique faster when he doesn't have to use that key. He pre-plans. He's like, I don't need to use it. Boom, 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 and it's
and
like
then
goes.
He puts it back
yeah,
up.
When he has to use it, yeah.
But it works because he has probably yeah. longer fingers.
Like that as well, because it got in the way a lot. It got in the way.
It's not in the way for me.
Because he's a big guy too. He was a big guy too. From where he was like 5'11" or 5'10", I think.
But yeah, it all depends on.
Yeah, it all depends. Yeah.
You know, let's say a teacher would have told him, you have to correct that. And he would have spent numerous hours working on that. For what, really? His technique was working. Sometimes we put so much effort in something that's not even broken. You know? It's working. Don't bother. Yeah. Why would you change it if it's working?
Yeah, exactly.
If it's not, of course you want to change it. Mm-hmm. But don't lose your time changing something that's not broken, you know? And I always try to think about that when I teach. Is it something that needs to be changed or not? Because you have great flutists like him that had unconventional little things. You know?
Oh, totally.
But also I've had a teacher who said to me, well, yeah, but if you took all the unconventional things of all the great flutists, you wouldn't have a great flutist. you shouldn't have too many of those, I guess.
Yeah, they're saying like, yeah, exactly. They're saying like Nina, she puffs with her cheeks again slightly and like, but yeah, it's a thing like, also, when you get older, your body tends to thin out a bit. So your cheeks, like Alexa, you can see that in her as well. She uses so much air blowing out. And she has a more percussive way of playing. But it's because of physics. Like, she wants those things to just show up to the end of the hall. She's trying to propel energy.
Head is.
Yeah, so much. Yeah, so many different things.
Like, I already have big cheeks.
Yeah. Yeah,
some
okay.
You know, it's all a different
chemistry.
Maybe
and like
some people use that to have more
exactly.
resonance.
They experiment, just like anyone should. They should experiment. If they want to emulate, try different things because everyone has a different way of trying to get the same type of sound sometimes. You never know.
Yeah, with different body types, you said, we get different results.
Exactly.
Different ways of doing things.
Is the tension of the upper lip something to work on consciously?
No, it shouldn't be tense, and it should just
stay involuntary.
There.
Yeah, it's involuntary. It's almost an involuntary. It doesn't move. Like
Personally,
I don't use it.
I don't
use it either.
Just leave it there, and I try not to move it too much. The lower lip moves a tiny bit.
The muscles on the lower lip work way more than the upper lip. A lot.
And it's also that
in general.
For me, if I use my upper lip, I can only use it going forward, and when I go forward, I lose my sound. Mm-hmm. So I don't move it. I leave it there. But it can also depend if my lower jaw is a bit back. Like it's not, I don't have a prominent jaw in the front. So it also depends on how you're built, I guess. But for me, I don't move it. Because it would mean bring it even more forward. That's the only way it can go. It can't go back. So I mostly push the lower one. But I guess, with a different face.
Different face, like I said with Nina, like I think somebody said because she's like, I said Nina's old, like they're not old.
She's not old.
She's they're like in their 40s, but I mean like what I'm saying is that they're taller people, so they have more elongated features, and like people have thinner cheekbones than other people, so you can see different things than you would if you guys played exactly the same. You wouldn't see what happens on you, but you might see something that happens on her in her cheeks. You know what I mean? Like you might see more puffiness. You might. You know what I mean? Like, it's so...
Yeah.
It all depends.
Yeah, like we said, I have big cheeks.
Yeah, that's why... Yeah, exactly. That's what you said. Exactly.
So, maybe I don't need to puff. I already have big cheeks. I don't know. I never studied that.
Here's another question.
Never
this is
of that
exactly.
Before.
No, neither me either. I'm glad you guys are that picky. Like, you guys get to see... We need more people understand how people are going. Yeah.
I'll think about that.
Candace, she wants to know, why do band directors teach their flute players to sit with their flutes perfectly straight beside them? Because she sees many professionals playing at an angle. I've seen this so much in my life.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that. I think it's a visual thing.
I think it's a visual thing to make things...
Good.
Yeah, they think it looks good. It makes everybody look... Because in band competitions, they adjudicate those little things like presentation and everyone's military, almost not military like, but it's like military like everyone stands in a line. But I think it's counterproductive because it hurts. It's so unnatural
yeah.
for the body, for a flute, for a flute player. I don't know about the other instruments that much, but for flute players, yes.
No, it's not. It's not healthy.
It's but, not. It's no, just not it's healthy. True. And your like, players will play better if you do it that way.
If you focus so much on that, you're not gosh. Putting your energy on the really important stuff.
Yeah.
And what's important really is that the angle here
yeah.
stays the same. So if you bring your head down like this, everything yeah. goes with it. Yeah. You know. It's just you don't want it to go like that.
Yeah.
You don't want your flute to move and your head to stay still because
yeah.
your sound will be terrible.
Yeah.
But it's just that. So when I go here, everything follows.
Right.
Because I don't want to lose the angle with right. the embouchure.
And being perfectly straight with straight angle, it's just, it's causing tension here, yeah. here.
For me, it's very difficult to move my right hand if I try to...
Like, oh my
I
gosh.
I feel that my right hand is...
You're losing technique. Yeah, you're already losing technique. Speed. Yeah, and speed. Yeah.
I lose a lot of speed.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't think it's a logical thing. Yeah. It's probably a visual thing, but
I think so too.
It's not helping the music.
I don't know how that got through to people, but it has to be something like that. Yeah. Hopefully
it's a military thing.
It's a military thing.
And probably in...
marching band? Marching oh yeah, in marching band, it's totally that. Yeah, band, you're so right. I did that in marching band, and we always had to be perfectly straight in line so we can all see... when we're marching together in line because of our peripheral vision. Everyone had to be straight. If you had an angle, something could lose where they're seeing so you can see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully that helps. I think try to play comfortably, you know, because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight, but not like... Uh-huh. Like I'm quite straight. It's not uh-huh. perfect, but it's enough, you know?
Yeah. Oh, Yuguan is wondering... they're finding some used flutes and they wonder what should they consider to buy when buying a used flute. Some say you should buy head as new, at least. Is that right? Maybe the head joint, I guess?
Oh. No.
No. When you're buying a used flute, try them before you buy them. That's the biggest thing. If you can't try them, try to go and find that exact flute at a flute store and try it and see if it feels the same. If you can do that, if you can't. Buying used is a big risk, you know, especially if you buy it online.
I've had a student who bought a flute online like that. He never tried and he got a very good flute.
But that's a Yamaha 222 or something like that. Those are standard.
They're standard flutes and yeah. you can't really miss, you know, they're built, how do you say that? They're
built like tanks?
No, but like... From one to the other, you don't have that.
Oh, yeah, there's no inconsistencies. Yeah. They're a very good copy. Yeah.
So he got it cheap online and mm-hmm. it was a good buy.
Yeah, there are some standard flutes that you can buy without hesitation usually if the pictures are good and the pads are good. There's no, make sure you get to find a picture that has the pads, at least all of them,
yeah.
If they're ripped or anything like that. You have to see if they're all consistent.
Very
yeah.
expensive to repair.
Yeah. In order to see that, just make sure they all look the same. If one looks different, ask why it looks different. Ask for a close-up or photo. Dents are not a big deal unless they're big dents. If they're little dents, it's not really going to make too much of a difference. Like little dings here and there. It's not a big deal. Make sure you ask them when the head joint was replaced, the head cork, because that cork could come in and it's going to be dry and then you it's just spinning inside the head joint and it's not...
Yeah,
that happens
have to
a lot.
To a repair shop.
Yeah, and do it. They'll change it for you. It's not expensive to change the head joint or the head cork, the cork and the head
but
joint.
When
yeah.
you buy a used flute, you buy the whole flute. You don't need a new head
joint. No need for that. You buy it all at once. If it's just the body, don't buy the body. Try to find a flute that's complete.
Yeah, whole flute.
Yeah, whole flute. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The tilt angle, when we were talking, I just want to go back to that thing about being in band. Really, like, it's about them holding their flute perfectly straight. Well, you know, I always see it this way when I see them playing. Elbow up, play like this.
But elbow up is terrible.
It's terrible, right? No, I'm just saying that's what I used to see. And I think it's just a matter of, like, trying to
keep
feel comfortable.
Your elbows down because you want the angle.
Yeah.
You want your wrist and your hand to mm-hmm. be in a straight line as much as possible. It's not really possible with the left hand, but look, I'm trying to keep the slant as little as possible. And with the left hand, with the right hand, it's pretty straight, mm-hmm. you know? Because if you're like this, any movement that's too wide,
yeah,
you know, too
it's going
to
restrict.
Yeah,
so much movement in like the fingers.
Put your fingers like this,
oh, yeah.
And then, and then
like this, boom, super fast. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, it's for hurting yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to hurt yourself. Yeah.
So, wrists are a very sensitive area, and a lot of people develop specific, like,
so don't bring
problems.
Like, you're not trying to fly here.
Like, I even see flutes. Yeah, exactly.
Little chicken.
Oh, God. Yeah, I even see flutes that have the head joints bent at a 45-degree angle so that the flute goes like this, and it goes down, and then your hands are, and it your fingers are going even faster because... I don't recommend that for everybody, but it does work. It's actually something I've tried many flutes like that. There's even flutes that have head joints that are in a triangle that go up and like this, and they can play the flute like this.
I wouldn't like that, but
I'm just saying there's so many different ways. Yeah. But I mean the 45 degree one, I think it's 45 degree
it's
angle.
It's a lot of
yeah, yeah.
The air, no?
No, not really, no, not at all.
I have that
physics.
I believe,
yeah, your beliefs. I play the flute straight, not in a triangle. But yeah, so hopefully that answered your question. They play completely straight, elbows up, and the flute straight beside them.
No elbows.
Just resting down.
You're going to hurt yourself.
You're going to have a lot of problems. A lot of people, 99% of people I've ever known that have had that, have had problems. Like, yeah. If they continue doing that, so it's
not
yeah.
Your body's not meant to go
no.
Like this. Just doing that, I already feel.
Oh, I don't want to do it again because it hurt.
Yeah.
You know, what do you guys? Okay, so this is about a flute. I think we are going to review this flute, the Pearl PF525RE Quantz flute, or Pearl flutes. Well, you did try some Pearl flutes. We will have that video out next week. We're going to do the Pearl one out. I think we did Pearl flute, huh? We reviewed.
I don't know the number.
I don't remember the number either.
I tried one or two when we went to New York.
Yeah. So look out for that. That will be out next week. A Pearl flute that they were nice. All the flutes we tried out were really great. Like,
yeah.
Flute makers now build really good flutes. Try as many as you can because usually, you know, it's like you have to find your true flute, you know.
Yeah.
So try as many as you can when you try flutes out. Even try the same model sometimes a couple times because
mm-hmm.
upper ones sometimes there's little changes and maybe one of them plays better than the other. So Gemeinhardt too, somebody said about the Gemeinhardt. Gemeinhardts are great flutes as well. We played a Gemeinhardt in the reviews as well. There was like a Crusader or Galway something,
I
a couple
remember.
Of things.
Oh yeah,
it was good too. It was surprising.
New
Gemeinhardts, yeah.
Yeah,
Gemeinhardts are good flutes too.
Didn't
Yamaha
recently or something?
I don't know. That I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was a higher model that we tried.
Yes.
It was good. Yeah.
They also make piccolos, too. Gemeinhardt piccolo is what you also tried as well.
Yeah, I was surprised because I had
That's in our 3 piccolo video, I
yeah.
think. I think.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So if you guys have any, we'll answer a couple more questions. And then if we missed any, let us know in the comments and we'll go back to them. Oh, there was one I remember. Can you explain French tonguing?
What is French tonguing?
What is French tonguing? There's the American tonguing. There's the American sound, which has its own American tonguing. And there's a French sound. And the French tonguing.
I know.
American
I
school.
Hear
I hear
time.
That all the time,
American
too.
American school and French school.
Yeah.
Personally, I learned in Quebec, mostly. So I had teachers. Quebec is, you know, it's like between France and United States, I feel, for the flute. Because
It's a big mix, for sure.
Because a lot of flutists in the 50s and 60s went to study in France and in Switzerland. And a lot went in United States. So it's a little melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's mixed here.
Yeah.
And I didn't learn, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had different teachers that studied United States and in France.
Mm-hmm.
And I did also master classes with American flutists and French flutists. Well, I can explain tonguing the way I know it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, you can tongue between your lips.
Yeah, there's that style as well.
Of,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's personally, I don't use it very often because it disturbs my embouchure.
Yeah. Because using it, like, what it plays on, like, what would they, could you example of that? Because I remember. Yeah.
It's a bit more percussive.
Right. Yeah, it's more forward.
And if I play just ta-ta-ta between
mm-hmm.
in the back of the teeth, you know. You hear the one in front is more percussive than the one in the back, you know.
But a lot of French people don't really play with their tongue in between the lips. That I think a couple flutists, they see that and they think it's that, but really it's more at where the teeth are. It's where, like, I see a lot of French flutists and French style, like, touching the teeth.
But a lot then, also there.
Yeah, but less and less.
Yeah, and also it's because it's more forward and slower.
Right.
So I only use it when I want something percussive and I have time.
Yeah.
Whenever I play a little bit faster, I go back.
Yeah, and that's more American, like playing at the roof of the mouth a little bit, like it's more duh-duh. But it's a mix, you know, like there's so much.
You can use different sounds.
Yep.
So whenever, totally. You know, when I practice tonguing, I practice, let's say I go like this and I do. So I'll do it one more like. And then I do a more slurred tonguing, you know, more like da 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 da. Well, I did it. So here I'm more like, you know, my tongue is just, how do you say?
Like pet?
Yeah, petting the roof of my mouth more than the ta 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 and then da 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 da. It depends what I want musically, you know?
Yeah.
So, but what I think for tonguing is the most important is you need to have air going.
Air behind it. You can put it anywhere. You can have the tongue anywhere, but if you don't have the air, it's not going to make anything.
The air is going out, and then the pressure is there, and then the tongue goes and schlock,
It's just cutting it up.
It's cutting the air.
Yeah. So that's different ways.
Think about. And also, what really helps is when you think that the tonguing doesn't happen when you put your tongue there, but it happens when you release your tongue. So then your tonguing will be way more efficient if you think the sound starts when you release the tongue.
Yep.
Then you...
There's so many different ways.
I used to think of it when I put my tongue there, and I was always...
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't clear, and it was a bit slow, always a bit late, not perfect.
Not precise,
And then when I started thinking when you release the tongue, then it became way
That's
more
when
precise.
It gets go. That's where the air, it's just physics. The tongue is now going up, then it releases the air.
Yeah, and then the air starts, and then when the air gets there, that's a schluck, schluck, schluck.
You got to have so much momentum to be able to keep going after it's been stopped by the tongue.
So that's it.
But there's
even for the takata, you can takata, that's a bit more...
Yeah.
You know, and then you can go daga daga da.
Yeah, there's so many different styles.
More close to each other in the mouth. Daga daga da, taka 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 da, daga daga da, taka 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 da.
Yeah.
You know, it's all those different sounds, but it's about when you release and the air goes. So that's how I see tonguing.
Yeah, I wouldn't restrict.
French,
American.
I don't know. For me, it's just the air goes and the tongue is there. I don't know how you can do it.
I wouldn't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wouldn't restrict. I wouldn't try to have. If you had somebody telling you there's only one way to tongue, I don't think there is. I think there's many different ways to experiment to get different types of sounds, because we're in a world that there are pieces that a Baroque piece, you can't tongue the same way in a Baroque piece as you would in a modern piece.
Well, if you play Nielsen and you play Bach, you're not gonna
tongue the same way at all. There's so many that's what I mean. There's so many different ways.
Totally right.
So don't just think if somebody's saying that to you, it's a big red light to me.
It's a thing everyone says, but I personally don't really get
I don't say that. That's the thing. I don't get it, so I'm not everybody, you know.
A lot of people say, American tonguing and French tonguing. And
just drives me wild, because I haven't heard that somebody say the French tongue, like, explain French tonguing in about 10 years. I'm surprised that they still talk about those types of things.
No, people say that still a lot.
But I know, but it's just it's surprising to me.
Because, you know, we all have the same physics, you know, behind it, it's the same.
Yeah, the approach. But the tongue is just a gate, you know.
But I think also tonguing is the language you speak might have a little influence on the way you're going to tongue, because that's the different muscles in your tongue and your mouth will be stronger or not, you know, depending on the tongue you speak, I guess. You know, you would have to ask a speech therapist, but I'm pretty sure, because they say after a certain age, if you learn a language, you'll always keep a little accent because your muscles are not trained to do those sounds.
That's it.
So that's maybe that's a little bit why people think there's a French tonguing and an American tonguing. Maybe that's different muscles that are stronger if you speak one language as a first language or the other.
Or the other.
But in the end, it's the same air pushing and the tongue is just cutting it. You know?
So we'll close off the podcast for today. But last, I just want to ask is for everybody and for us as well. Like, it's 2018. We have goals. If you guys have goals, let us know in the comment section. What are your goals for this year for playing flute? Do you want to learn a new piece? Do you want to have a concert? Anything. And I know for us, it's about making more videos. But
finishing the book
and also doing some concerts. And hopefully we'll do a live concert here. Going to try to do something this year and do an actual full live concert on the channel with you playing and some fun stuff like that. And then, yeah, just playing more, you know, playing more and setting up stuff is what I think I have planned for this year, and practice more a little bit. And yeah, so let us know in the comments, let us know what your goals are. And it was great answering all your questions. And we do this every 2 weeks, so we'll do the flute podcast again in 2 weeks. And stay tuned for next week. We'll do a just practicing as well, and we have a couple videos released this week. We're gonna release at least 2 or 3 videos this week again. And yeah, I will talk to you guys later. I'm Nick,
and I'm Amelie.
See you guys later. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye
for watching.
Bye.